1982 is English Maritime Year, and the play you're about to hear is the story of one of the naval mutinies that swept over 18th century England, heavily threatening her defences at a time of war. The Nore Mutiny was led by Richard Parker, a baker's son from Devon, an ambitious but temperamental man who finally made a name for himself in maritime history as President of the Floating Republic. And now, Afternoon Theatre.
The Floating Republic by Paul Bryars, starring Brian Cox as Richard Parker, with Bernard Hill, Julian Curry, Michael Tudor Barnes, Stephen Thorne, and Jennifer Piercy as Anne Parker.
Parker, your wife has come.
Anne? Annie.
Governor says you may be alone, as 'tis the last time.
The last? Richard, what means he?
Fear not. The penalty for debt is not yet the gallows. In Scotland, they merely let you rot to death.
But then why? He said the last time.
I think he anticipates my release.
Your release?
You hear that? Catch. 10 golden sovereigns. They're worth 30, but the rest now jingle in my friend, the governor's pocket. 18 for my creditors and 2 for his good services.
What have you done?
They needs must make up the quota laid upon the county of Perth to man the king's ships. There was a 30-guinea inducement.
You would not.
'Tis already done, Annie. And I'm bought and sold.
Oh, dear God, must you ever take the most desperate course?
Desperate? What could be more desperate than my present plight?
You have been a king's officer. Have you forgotten what you've told me of life on the lower
deck? Others endure it.
Others know no better. Men can endure the life of brutes. It is all they have ever known. But for a man of education and birth who's enjoyed all
the... Enjoyed? What have I enjoyed? What have I known that was any better? I'm 30 years old. What have I done? Look where I am. See what company I keep.
It was not always so. Until our late misfortune, you had employment.
Employment? Forcing elementary knowledge into the skulls of snivelling infants. Call you that employment?
We had each other.
Aye. And a single room in a cheap lodgement whose walls were but damp screens for vermin to breed in. Another belch, but 'twas common knowledge throughout the house.
You are cruel indeed that you trample so on my remembrance.
Then you do not remember the rows we had. Going angry to bed night after night, lying there in our pillowed trenches, hissing recriminations across the dark.
That is most unfair, and you notice so. You... Kill the future. Do not kill the past, for 'tis all that is left to me.
I had no choice, Anne.
You would not let me help you. I could have obtained employment to pay our debts.
'Tis not for you to suffer for my faults.
Well, what would you have me do? Make merry?
You know what I mean. I will attend to mine own ends.
Aye, and your remedy is pride, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, till it be the death of you, not but pride.
'Tis all I have. Would you take it from me?
Oh, Richard, you must ever dramatize misfortune, seeking to make it your life's work instead of fighting it.
Oh, I have done with fighting. Now I do surrender to it. Let it do with me what it will. 30 guineas is not so bad a bargain.
You wish for death, or worse, to prove the wisdom of your own dark prophecies. I will not see you again.
Now, who is the desperate one? Come, I did not mean our discourse to make such rough passage. Anne, look at me. Very well. I have took a risk, but 'tis not entirely rash. We've been at war with the French since they did kill their king in 93. 4 years of it, and what profit has it brought us? Our armies are defeated, our allies surrendered, and Holland and Spain joined in the war against us. William Pitt is not my choice for leader, but he has the sense to know when he must talk with his enemy, and if rumors are to be believed, he has already, in secret. Listen. For all we know, the war will be over by the time I join the fleet.
Oh.
And we will be clear of debt and together again.
Richard, if I fear your despondent nature, I do suffer far worse tortures by your optimism. When do you go?
I leave tomorrow. There's a tender waiting at Leith Harbour to carry us to the North Sea Fleet.
And where is it anchored?
Off Thames Mouth at a place they call the Nore.
Get them aboard, bo'sun, and stowed below. And mind you batten down the hatches so we don't have to smell the buggers. They reek of a jailhouse.
Aye, aye, sir.
Here is your receipt, Mr. Campbell.
Aye, thanks, sir.
I doubt but we'll make seamen of them if the war lasts long enough.
Well, there's one among them already, Lieutenant, as you can take his word for it. Swears he were an officer, too, at one time.
Oh, the devil he does. And who is this fine fellow?
There, in the black coat, with a face dark as a Frenchman's. His name is Parker.
Why, I've served with him. Parker! Richard Parker, is it you?
Sir?
Do you not remember me? William Platt. We were midshipmen together aboard the old Association.
Yes, sir. I remember.
What do you do in this company? Carry on, bo'sun. I'll follow you aboard with this man. I thought you were in the Navy still.
I am in the Navy, sir.
Oh, damn it, man, you know what I mean. I thought you were made lieutenant by now, as I am. What happened?
I regret that I was disrated.
What was your offense?
I did but offend the first officer, who would maintain that Edmund Burke was a finer orator than Charles James Fox, an illusion I sought to remedy.
And for that, you were disrated.
'Twas thought my method of debate warranted a charge of insubordination, in that I did challenge him to maintain his views at dawn with pistols. He chose a weapon more to his liking, and I was court-martialed.
Christ, Parker. You were ever strong in your opinions, and ever ready to back them with sword or pistol, as I remember. It don't do. Not with your superiors. We're not in France, you know.
No, sir.
But you were not disrated direct to debtor's prison.
No. My journey thither was a more errant navigation.
You did not desert.
No, sir. I had the offer of warrant rank from the captain of another ship, but unhappily fell ill and was discharged. Since when I have been foully pursued by ill fortune. Then, being caught in usurious toils, was confined to the debtor's prison until such a time as I could pay, which, but for my present employment, would ne'er have occurred.
So that's the way of it. It seems the sea must have you, Parker.
Aye, sir.
It will not be easy for you. Indeed, it will be damned difficult life below decks for one who has held the King's commission, and little I can do to help you.
I would be obliged if you could tell me aught of our destination.
What? Oh, the Nore. Do you not know it?
I know only that it is an anchorage at the confluence of the Thames and Medway, and ill-favored, if what I've heard is true.
Aye, I will not mislead you. It is as bleak a mooring as I did see, with as many prison hulks in the creeks and marshes thereabout as there are king's ships upon the water.
And to which ship do you take us now?
To the Sandwich of 90 guns, that was Rodney's flagship at the Battle of the Saints. She's now used to accommodate the men brought in by the press and other methods. On which account, she's as overcrowded as a Pompey whorehouse and as riddled with the pox. I, for my sins, am her first lieutenant. She lies about a mile off Sheerness Fort as a depot ship for the fleet. You will not be with us long, but some other vessel will have you to make up her crew. Most of our fleet's at Yarmouth under Duncan, ready to do battle with the Dutch. Do they ever dare venture out to sea?
I had heard there was talk of peace.
Peace? With the French holding the Low Countries and the Med denied our shipping, no British government worthy of the name could think on it.
But for what do we fight? We cannot put the French king's head back upon his shoulders. And our armies are disgraced in battle, bare able or willing to stem revolt at home, let alone in Paris.
There is still the fleet. And while we yet command to seize, the tide of revolt will ne'er sweep o'er England. Now, if you would excuse me. Bo'sun, take this man and put him with the others.
Aye, aye.
And take my advice, Parker. Delay talk like that on the lower deck, or it will go hard with you.
Aye, aye, sir. If I might request, I should like to stay on deck and help work the ship. You've seen the company I keep. Why, the waist will be awash with vomit before we leave the harbor.
Very well, Parker.
Put him to work with the forecastle men, bo'sun, for he knows his way about.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Campbell,
bid
you good day. We shall be back for more in a month or two, I have no doubt.
Aye, good day to you, Lieutenant, and fair wind to the Nore.
What say you, bo'sun?
Shall we set the studsails?
Oh, if I shall take a scrap more canvas, sir. And I has a mind to see the Nore afore dusk.
Aye, and the inside of a Sheerness brothel before dawn, eh?
What, me, sir?
Ah, you, sir. Well, let us have the main topman aloft, then, and we shall race the sun down to Sheppey.
Hey, topman aloft! Set studsails!
Set studsails!
How fares our new recruit,
sir?
Our friend, Parker, who you did place in the forecastle. I like not the way he grips the rail and stares into the sea like he's found an old enemy. Parker! Parker!
I will attend to mine own
ailments. Your remedy is pride, as it was in the beginning, is now and ever shall, till it be the death.
'Tis all I have. Would you take it from me?
You must ever traumatize misfortune, seeking to make it your life's work instead of fighting.
I have done with fighting. Now I do surrender to it.
He knows what end of a rope to pull, for all he speaks as fine as any gentleman. begging your pardon, sir.
Aye. God help him on the lower deck, for he'll find a few gentlemen there, I warrant.
Well, that looked like he's found his sea legs, sir, the way he does grip the rail.
I think it is his mind that is more troubled than his legs. As I remember, he changes mood as a barometer in a hurricane. Watch him, bosun, and keep him busy, but I like not his brooding.
The war will be over by the time I join the fleet, and we will be clear of debt and together again.
The Frenchmen holding the Low Countries and the Med denied us. No British government worthy of the name could
you
think on it.
You have these kings, officer. Have you forgotten what you yourself have told me of life?
I will attend to mine own ill.
It's damn difficult for one of us held the king's commission.
I have done with it. Now I will
see.
I have done with it.
Try.
Now I surrender to it.
Men overboard! Parker!
Parker's jumped!
All hands ready about!
There he is! See?
Bosun, when we come into the wind, you take the gig and heave the bastard out.
Aye, aye, sir!
Boat's crew!
You should have let me drown.
By God, Parker. I should have the skin stripped off your back for this. Here, have some of this brandy. That is more than you merit. In the name of God, what possessed you, man?
Your own grim words did echo in my own thoughts. And most desolate did they sound. 'Tis a living death that awaits me, and we both do know it.
Oh, Christ, man, we live to fight misfortune, not surrender to it.
You have not endured the storms that I have.
Oh, think you not? Why, if all winds were fair, what need we of good sailors?
What need we of gentlemen on the lower deck?
I spoke without thought. Compose yourself with dignity and do your duty, and the men will respect you, look up to you. You might have much influence among them as one who once held the king's commission and might rise again to warrant rank.
What will happen to me now? Will you have me chained?
You know that I ought. Do you give me your word that you'll make no further attempt at such folly?
Aye. You have my word. As a gentleman.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen, I say to you that a more destitute government has ne'er existed in British history. Having destroyed more human beings in its foreign wars than Louis XIV, and attempted the lives of more innocent men at home than Henry VIII.
Charles, wait but a moment.
Hmm?
Oh, why, George, would you be seen with me today and not afeard for your post?
Fie, and who else would be First Lord of the Admiralty at this present moment in our history?
Well, I fear I am not fit company for a king's minister. Didn't you hear my speech?
Since when did your little speeches discomfort me? I wish you to do the king a small service.
Oh, now you go too far, George. I fear I'm under a vow to abstain from such pleasures.
Will you listen a moment? As I think you do owe me a favour.
I do.
That small matter of Lady H and a certain country house in Berkshire.
Ah, enough. Name your favour, George.
Have you received any recent communication from those in the service I have the doubtful honour to command?
Oh, George, do you impute some scandal? A liaison with some rosy-cheeked cherub of the lower deck? My lord, I assure you my tastes are entirely to the contrary.
You are impossible. Have you been delivered a petition from men serving with the fleet?
A petition? You do intrigue me, George. Of what nature?
Jesus, what is the nature of any petition? Complaints, demands for redress, an increase in pay.
Ah.
You have, then.
So, your people are unhappy. Well, that's no secret. Their pay is a disgrace, their condition worse, and most of them are forced into service against their will. Why don't you do something about it, George? You have the reputation of a liberal man, else I wouldn't be talking to you now.
It's because I wish to do something about it that I require to know who may be counted upon to bring some pressure to bear. You know what it's like to persuade Bill Pitt to unloose the purse strings.
Ah, I see it now. You fear to raise a row yourself and seek that I should do it for you. Well, that I will, and prompt. But you had better join your voice to it, for if the fleet fails you, George, why, where else will you and your Tory friends hide, save behind those wooden walls?
Do you not yourself value the protection they afford us?
I? Oh, my dear George, 'tis I who have been urging the government to make peace with our friends in Paris these last 4 years.
Friends? Charles, you delude yourself. Why, man, you would be among the first to take the tumbril ride.
Do you think so? And is that why you seek to enlist my assistance in this matter?
I seek to persuade you that if you are in receipt of these petitions, you will use your influence among these people to persuade them against any intemperate action.
And why should I?
Consider, Charles, you believe in reform, do you not? And not in revolution. Well, I tell you this. If the fleet do fail us, then revolution we will have.
So my choice, as you see it, is between Billy Pitt and the tumbril. Difficult.
Aye, as it is for all of us who call ourselves gentlemen.
The tumbril has at least this virtue. It is going somewhere.
The devil, why, there's no talking to you. I would find more sobriety at White's. And so I shall repair thither.
Then I too, but I tell you this, George, soberly. If there is any persuading to do, you had better persuade your masters to treat their poor seamen with more consideration than they have shown. For I need no petition to tell me in what condition your poor dogs are kennelled. Why, they're beaten, starved, and flogged till their spirit is tamed, and then sicked upon the enemy. Well, the day is nigh, my lord, when they will begin to wonder who their true enemy is. And then they will bite, George. And you had better not be there when they do.
April 12th, 1797. My dearest Anne, I write this from the lower gun deck of the flagship Sandwich at the Nore, about 1 mile off the port of Sheerness, trusting that you're in good health and assuring you of my own condition. Much is as I do remember it, though I was never so close to the bilges. The air is thick with their stench, a fearsome brew of dead vermin and rotten timbers mingled with tar in the unwashed flesh of my new companions, who are as diverse a crew as nature can devise. From paupers in rags to swaggering dandies of the lower deck in blue jackets and spotted waistcoats, with a fur hat set jaunty upon their tarry locks and the smell of rum upon their breath. That being the one provision that has not denied us here. And all squabbling and fighting for hammock space like so many starlings, ever wary of the cat that hath nine tails.
All hands! All hands to witness punishment!
By Christ. What again? It's the third time since I had come aboard.
Then you'd be lucky, Squire. If were you aboard direct in a 64 that swings to starboard, you would have that bounty bastard Bligh for captain. And I swear to you, he does flog his people daily but to exercise the cat.
Whose claws may yet be drawn if what I hear is true.
What mean you?
I'm not deaf, Mr. Davis, nor blind. I know what is afoot.
Aye. But whose side you take, Master Parker? That we should like to know.
Move, you vermin! Else you shall feel the weight of my staff across your backs! Seize the prisoner! Thomas Harkless, you have been found guilty of offending against the Articles of War in that you did use abusive and threatening language to a purser's steward who did serve you cheese that was, by your account, afflicted with the worm. And further, that you did push the said cheese into the face of the master-at-arms upon his being called to the disturbance. Do you have anything to say before I order punishment?
Sir, 'twas more meat than cheese, and I tell no lie. Why, it did walk to the table on its own accord and dance a goodly jig that had much life about it.
Harkless, you know as well as I the proper procedure for making complaints.
Aye, sir, but with respect, sir, when I did complain to this purser steward, he did say it was fit fodder for jailbait, which is what we were, sir, says he. And if I did not wish to sup upon the worms, they could make supper of me and be damned to the lot of us. Begging your pardon, sir. And as to the master-at-arms, sir, saving his presence, I sought only to give him taste of what passes for provision upon the lower deck, sir, that he may make report to higher authority.
That will do, Harkless. Very well, master-at-arms. Let punishment commence.
Lay it on him, Jarvis, and with due rigor, else you follow him to the gratings. One. Two. Three.
By God, will they never learn. By this discipline, as they call it, they do but make a bad man worse and break a good man's heart so he is useless to them. Aye, and apt to listen to these very murmurings of mutiny they hope to silence by such example. I would kill the man that took the cap to me and gladly hang for it.
19! 20! Cut him down.
Very well, master at arms. Dismiss the crew.
You men, come carry this scum below. The rest of you to your duties. There, you bastard. Now you have served your provision. 'Twill teach you to corrupt me with your filth.
That filth is what we must needs call our victuals. An it please you, my friend.
Who the hell are you that you make so bold?
My name is Parker. Richard Parker. And I call it not bold to address you thus, or as bold, perchance, as to stir with your boot one who has been flogged senseless with his back in strips about the deck.
You damned insolent bastard! Why, I'll smash those words down your throat, so help me!
What is amiss? Master-at-arms, why are these men not about their duties?
This man gave me insolence, sir.
Parker, is that true?
With respect, sir, I am as incapable of addressing insolence to this man as he of receiving it.
That will do, Parker! Very well, master-at-arms. I will deal with this.
Get you below, Parker, before you talk yourself into more trouble.
With your permission, sir, I would help this man below. He can barely move as you have served him.
By God, Parker, you go too far.
Oh, pick him up. Get about your duties. And, bosun, what do you stare at? Have this deck swilled down, and quick about it. Yep.
Come on, lads. Gently with him.
Christ. That was well spoken, Squire. It is a bloody miracle you be knocked down for the next flogging.
Mr. Platt and I were midshipmen together. It does give me some small influence.
By God, it does. You spoke to him as to an equal with half the crew listening on.
We're all equal, Mr. Davis, as Thomas Paine can be believed. Even this poor wreck we carry between us.
Then carry me more carefully, you buggers, else I'd be more equal to a corpse.
And so, my dearest Annie, you may imagine me thus, finding space to write this letter upon the broad back of a 32-pounder. My light, a spear of the sun that does pierce our wooden walls at intervals through every gun port. And around me, at their leisure, the scourings of jail and hedgerow and dockside tavern, and those most cantankerous of the king's subjects who are taken for sedition or for forming combinations of their trade for better wages, on whose account I think the officers are most generous with the lash. Yet am I in good spirits, for I've found here, in this dank, dripping twilight, the respect that was denied me in the wardroom, and do have that influence among the men as has encouraged me to trust that the fates may yet have a use for your loving, though absent husband, Richard Parker.
Oh, what means he by that? Oh, God, I fear to think on it. He was ever misled by this guiding light of his that does betray us from one folly to another and will end, as I am not mistook, in total darkness.
Who is that?
It is Jean. Can I come in?
Aye. The door is not locked.
Our landlady sent you a letter from Richard.
Aye.
Is he well?
As near as I can judge. 'Twas written 3 weeks since, and doubtless his mood has changed a score of times while it's been in the mail. He's with the North Sea Fleet anchored off Sheerness.
Will you go to him?
Oh, he will not think of it. For he says 'twould mean coming out in the vessel in a bumboat with a monstrous regiment of boars, as he calls them, to share his hammock with at best a scrap of canvas, our only privacy.
Cannot he come ashore to you?
Oh, Jean, 'tis plain you do not know the navy. Those of his station are kept prisoner aboard till they are discharged.
Oh, cheer up, lass. When he was here, you were ever quarrelling.
Oh, Jeanie, you have a trick of speaking truth when it does most hurt.
Oh, I'm sorry, pet. I didn't
know.
No.
You're a good friend, Jean, and say only what is in my thoughts. Why do we marry men when it only brings us grief?
You ask that of me, who's but a spinster, and like to remain one while this war continues. Why did you?
What, marry? Oh, because he had a pretty face and spoke romance in my ear, and I wished to escape from my father. Well, why else do maids marry?
And yet you stand by him still.
Because I love him still. And that's the worst folly of all.
The war may end soon. Or perchance he'd be promoted and make you an officer's wife.
Or die and make me a widow. No. I did not say that. It is unlucky. But he will ne'er be an officer again. Oh, his temper is too hot for the wardroom, and his pride too great for one who they count a baker's son.
What ails him, man? But he's his own worst enemy.
It's not every man you ever met. He has had the education of a gentleman, Jean, but lacks land, wealth, and position. But he will never be satisfied till he has one or the other.
Then he will be a hero, maybe. But I grant you, he has the looks of one. That sullen lip and flashing eye.
Aye, and he has a pose for it, too. But I fear that of all his past occupations, the present is the one for which his temperament is least suited. For 'twill ever betray him to all that is rash and ill-considered, and the navy is not as patient as a woman, nor as forgiving, either.
Acting upon the certain knowledge that agitators and malcontents do maliciously foment disorder within the fleet, inciting mutiny and the drawing up of unlawful petitions, and that it is upon the fleet that the welfare and safety of the realm do chiefly depend, I am directed, in the absence of the captain, to make known to you the articles of war.
What make you of this, Mr. Parker? It is not Sunday, and we be preached at and by the first lieutenant with all.
They're nervous. Something has occurred to alarm them. I would I knew what.
Oh, here's one who might. John Blake, do you run short of grog on Inflexible that you must come skulking among honest men?
Joy to you, Will Davis. 'Twas you I was looking for, amongst others. Have you heard the news from Portsmouth?
Ah, did I not tell you, Mr. Parker? He's as quick and sure as the semaphore.
Who is this?
Ah, fear not. 'Tis no narc to go sneaking to the master at arms. But a man after your own level of heart, John. Richard Parker, this is John Blake, gunner off Inflexible.
Your servant, Mr. Blake.
Parker? Is it you who did lately confront the first lieutenant and master at arms before the whole ship's company?
Oh, so that was heard on Inflexible, was it? Aye, it was he. And some sight, John.
And I wish I had seen it. So, welcome to you, Mr. Parker. Though I'd not wish my worst enemy aboard if the truth be known. Belayed that. For I vow I would see Master William Pitt fighting for hammock room with bilge rats in the all up, and be damned to him.
I warrant would empty the vessel of bilge rats in an instant to suffer such company, Mr. Blake.
I see you are a free thinker, sir. We have need of such talent, Mr. Parker, on the lower deck, for the news I bring you is that the Channel Fleet has refused to sail until our grievances be met.
What? The whole fleet at Spithead? Jesus! Is it mutiny, then?
That is what our masters will seek to call it. But the men are united, as I hear it. And while they remain so, there is naught they can do but rant in the broadsheets.
And is there bloodshed? The Marines?
None, as I know. The Marines being with the people. And the officers confined below are put ashore without harm in every case.
And what do the people ask for?
But a rise in pay, chiefly. 7 shillings upon the present 19 a month. Arrears paid in full and improvement of provisions. A modest claim as I see it.
Aye. For those in the merchant fleet do get four times what is deemed sufficient for we who do make the seas safe for them.
Aye, but 7 shillings? And will they pay it? What think you, Mr. Parker?
Bill Pitt was never generous in such matters, and he has his Tory squires to think on who must pay the reckoning. They are ever loath to spend money on aught but their own comforts.
Then we must teach them to think on us who keep them snug in their beds. For we will not be turned away penniless this time. And if our spit-out comrades cannot move them, then we shall make such waves here as will rush up Thames water and rock Parliament at its very moorings.
But what must we do?
First, elect delegates who may speak for the whole crew as we have on Inflexible. Men who will not fear to speak boldly to their officers. That's Mr. Parker here. And we must send word to the rest of our fleet at Yarmouth that we may be sure of their support.
Can you be sure of the people here?
Not all, but there is much discontent, as you know. And this news from Portsmouth will move them greatly. We must spread the word. And as I am not mistook, the tempers of the people will boil over. What is most vital, listen, is that we are ready and may direct their passions when the time comes.
And when will that be, Mr. Blake?
You must wait for the signal. Which will be sooner than later. For many of our officers are unsure about their business. Wait for the sound of a signal gun fired twice and cheering from the yards, and then be ready to take over the running of your ship.
And if they resist us?
Then you must meet force with force. But remember, we are many, and they are few. And if we be bold and united, they will not raise a finger against us.
Article the 19th. If any person in or belonging to the fleet shall make or endeavour to make any mutinous assembly upon any pretense whatsoever, every person offending thereon and being convicted thereof by the sentence of the court-martial shall suffer death.
Good morning, Admiral. I regret that I am late. I understood you wish to see me at your quarters.
Did I not make it clear, Captain Bligh? Well, you're here now. What do you make of it?
Sir?
The fort man, the defences. How is it disposed?
I am no military engineer, sir.
Oh, but you do know what damage a cannonball can inflict. What make you of these walls?
Why, they crumble at a touch, sir. A good blow might have them down.
Long overdue for repair, and now it may be too late.
You fear invasion, sir? If so, I think the fleet is your better defense.
It is the fleet I am most to fear, Captain. The chief reason that I am anxious for our defense.
You fear our fleet will turn its cannon upon the fort.
You think not?
No, sir.
Well, I hope you're right. But as Port Admiral, I must take every precaution, Captain. If our people here join in protest with the men of the Channel Fleet, we have not the means to continue this war. And I need hardly remind you that there is a Dutch fleet but a few leagues to the east that's anxious to revenge past injuries, as are their new friends the French.
Aye, and with an army waiting to embark, if our intelligence is correct, sir.
There are people on board, Director. What is their temper?
There are the usual mutterings, and not without cause, though I say it myself. But as I cannot apply a remedy, I keep what discipline I can with a cat.
So I've heard. Well, you know more of mutiny than most of us. Lord, is it not enough to have the fleets of France and Spain and Holland arraigned against us, that we needs must fight our own fleet as well? What is that?
A signal gun. Do you see the smoke? It is Inflexible firing. And again.
But what is amiss? Are we attacked?
There's not a sail in sight, save those fishing boats out there.
Tell me what is happening on board Inflexible.
The hands are assembled on deck. They're climbing the rigging.
Do they make ready for sea? They have no...
It looks like that they are cheering. Yes, they have their caps off and are waving them and cheering.
What the hell is going on over there? By God, the whole crew must be aloft, clinging to the yards like birds in a tree.
Mr. Platt, sir, look, on director. It is the same performance. Listen to the cheers.
You men, what are you about? By God, I'll not have this. Not aboard Sandwich. Master at arms, stop them running about. Sergeant! Arm the marines! Davis, what has got into the men?
With respect, sir. Will you return to the quarterdeck where you will not be harmed?
Be damned to you! I'm in command here, Davis, while the captain's ashore.
Bendy, you give us the keys to the magazine, sir, in the store.
What? I'll see you hang first. What, are you not the man was flogged but a few days ago? Did you learn nothing by it? Sergeant! Sergeant! Where are your men? Have them load muskets and form up amidship.
Belay that! Lads, get those carronades turned to face the quarterdeck. You Marines, throw down those muskets. What will be the worst for you?
Parker! My God, are you with these dogs?
If there is bloodshed between sailors and Marines, sir, it will be upon your head. Aye. And to no avail, for the people are united and must win any encounter.
We intend no disrespect, sir, but we mean to have our complaints attended and will not be ignored.
As you have some influence over these men, Parker, I command you. Man, what part do you play in this? Oh, Christ, curse the day I fished you out of the North Sea.
The people have just cause for complaint, and you know it as well as I do.
Men, listen to me. Think upon the disgrace you bring upon yourselves and upon your poor country. If we fail in our duty, who will save the realm from invasion and bloody revolution?
Take him, Davies. Confine him below deck.
Take your hands off me.
We are ready to do our duty, sir, whensoever the enemy puts to sea.
But in the meantime, we'll not be moved from our course.
Parker, I implore you. This is madness. 'Tis mutiny. Can you not see?
There's one or other, maybe both, and 'twill open many eyes and close some before it is through.
Come in.
Here is Earl Spencer, sir.
Ah, my lord, you are most welcome. Though I do regret the necessity for your visit. Will you take a glass of Madeira?
Your servant, Admiral, thank you, I will not. Can we see the fleet from this vantage?
It's on a clear day, you may, but in this rain, only the ships are the closest to the shore.
What dispositions have they made?
They are moored in a double crescent, with the battleships in the centre and gunboats at either end, just beyond the range of the guns in the fort. Though we dare not fire them, lest the walls fall down.
And there, my lord, you may see better through this.
Thank you, Bligh. Do you communicate with them?
There are boats going to and fro, my lord, all the time. And they have made some sort of shore base in a tavern of the town called the Checkers.
Have they, my God? Are they so sure of themselves?
You can do naught about it, my lord. The garrison here is small, and I fear there is some sympathy with the seamen among the soldiery and the townspeople here.
Mm. And is every ship infested with this plague?
I am afraid so, my lord. The officers are confined or put ashore, and every ship does fly the red flag at her masthead.
So I see. It's not my favourite colour.
'Tis one they disgrace, for as you must know, my lord, 'tis flown only when ships go into battle and means defiance to the enemy.
So, and now we are the enemy. Well, I learn little by looking at them. How do they conduct themselves? Has there been any violence?
No, my lord. For the most part, they conduct themselves with discipline and show respect to those officers who are still aboard, though they will not take orders from them.
Who will they take orders from?
From their own elected officers, my lord.
Elected officers in England?
They call them delegates, my lord. They meet aboard the Sandwich, which now they call the Parliament ship.
And is it these same delegates who have spurned our offer?
Aye, my lord.
Know they the terms? And that they have been accepted by the men at Spithead?
Yes, aye, my lord. I gave them the news myself aboard Sandwich and spelled it out to them. 4 shillings and 6 pence a month upon their present pay, and the king's pardon for their treason. They say it is not enough.
And what do they call enough?
They have drawn up their demands in the form of a humble petition, my lord. I have a copy here.
I've seen enough petitions these last few weeks to sink a navy. Sirs, we do humbly showeth that every indulgence granted to the fleet at Portsmouth be granted to His Majesty's subject serving in the fleet at the Nore. Yet you say they have this assurance.
Aye, sir, but do read on.
That whenever a ship puts into harbour, its people shall have leave to go and see their friends and families. Mm. What, and should we ever see them again, I ask? That all ships, before they go out to sea, shall be paid all arrears of wages, that no officer turned out of His Majesty's ships shall be employed in the same ships again without the consent of the ship's company. Why, if this is humility, I would trade my frock coat for a blue jacket and a ring in the ear.
It gets worse, my lord, as you read on.
That men wounded in battle be paid until they are discharged or returned to duty. Are they not, then? Dear God.
that prize money be distributed more equally, the portion being received at present by an able seaman being but one part to every 7,000 received by his admiral. That amendment be made to the Articles of War. Ah, there we have it. Are they specific?
They like not the use of the cat, my lord, and would have us take off our hats to them, and bending the knee, ask most humbly that they ascend the rigging to trim the sails.
Are there agitators among them? Whoever drew up this petition does not lack education.
Yes, assuredly there are. But yet I fear that there is wide support from the crews. My own belief is that, having but lately come out in support of the men at Spithead, they cannot now give in without loss of dignity, and wish to bring away more concessions so they may feel that they have achieved some victory.
Well, they will soon learn their error. It was the very devil to persuade Master Pitt to pay more wages to these men, and this is their gratitude. They think concession is but weakness, and they can demand more of us. So we must show them our strength. Know you that Sir Charles Grey is expected here on the morrow with two regiments of fencibles and a squadron of dragoons?
You would use troops against them, my lord?
I fail to see how that would be practical, Admiral, lest you know ways of making them walk upon water. No, the redcoats will secure the town. In the meantime, I've sent word to Duncan at Yarmouth to bring his 14 ship of the line round to the Nore. Their guns will persuade these villains to reason.
No, it is a most unhappy business, my lord, when English seamen must be opposed against their own, as if there were not enough foreigners for them to fight.
Quite. And some 40,000 at present assembled in the Low Countries, with 18 Dutch battleships to escort them over, and naught to stop them except our fractious seamen out there.
Is it your intent to speak with them, my lord?
To be frank, Admiral, I know not. There is much anxiety in London, and 'twas felt I should be on hand, as 'twere, but to meet with them may display weakness. I will have to sleep on it.
With respect, my lord, you may not have that luxury. The enemy is upon us.
What?
And at their head is the man they have elected spokesman of their cause.
And who is he, Captain?
One of our quotermen, my lord. His name is Parker. Richard Parker.
Well, here's a pretty sight. Though your scarlet ribbons are a little overwatered, I fear.
Good day to you, sir. We would like to ask whether the Earl Spencer has come here to meet with us.
Who are you, sir, that you wish to meet with him?
My name is Parker, sir, as I think you do know. And I'm elected by the delegates here to put our request to his lordship.
Are these the same requests we've heard before? Or are there new fancies that you've dreamed up?
We respectfully request that his lordship come aboard the Sandwich and settle his business. Will you ask him, sir?
Wait here.
I'd as soon wait inside than it please you, Admiral.
I think it would please him more to see us waiting upon the hanging by the looks he gives us.
Knock again, Richard, and make sure he hears it.
His lordship will not do that.
Then may we not see him here?
You may see his lordship, only for the purpose of declaring that you will return to duty and accept the king's pardon.
But how are we to have our grievances taken into consideration?
All your grievances have been redressed, Parker. Your pay is increased, and the men of Portsmouth have returned to their duty, as you must. Now, if you will excuse me.
And the devil does he skulk in there and thinks he cannot treat with his comrades at the door down?
No! It's back to the alehouse. And talk on it.
I say we blockade him in there till he come down to us.
I say we must not give offence, John, till we know his mind.
What offence? Why, when you have the dragon by the tail, do you stoop to stroke him?
We gain nothing by taking action rashly.
Ah, then do you take action in the matter of our ale, Mr. Davis, for I've a rare thirst on me. What think you, Richard? What game do they play?
I know not. Save a waiting one. They must know the people are not as united as we would wish it. They have the promise of more pay, and it begins to sway the weaker among them.
Pay is but the least of our ills. Even will we pay twice what is offered, 'twas not give us our dignity. No, not our right to live as free-born men and not as slaves.
You frown, but you know 'tis so.
Why, man, we have struck a blow for freedom here and the rights of man. Will we surrender now for a few pennyworth of copper and a doubtful pardon?
What can we do if they will not meet with us?
Why, we can take what they will not give. Look, we live in an age of revolution. when men do daily rend the chains that have for centuries bound them. The French have shown the way. And are we lesser men than they? 'Tis against these eruptions from below that our present government does batten down the hatches. Aye, and trust to us, their jolly jack tars, to keep them locked tight. Oh, they tell us we fight for king and country. But we do fight but to keep them whom we call our masters in dominion over us, and the rest condemned to servitude.
Yes, John, but...
But now we have in our grasp a power as great as that which did bring the French tyrant to yield. And we must use it, Richard, and not shirk the task.
But to what purpose?
Why, for liberty. Equality, fraternity. What better purpose than these? For peace with our brethren, who have fought the same battles in Paris, aye, and have won, if we do not win them back for our masters.
There are some would say you speak treason, and not only among our masters. Most of our people count themselves loyal to the king.
And many who say, as John Wilkes, that they do love the king so much they hope never to see another. You know I speak only what you think, do I not?
Yes, but you go further than most of our people want or would follow.
I think I go further than you want. True.
One must trim sails to the wind, John. And it blows strong against us at present. Tom Paine...
Away with that. Save your canticles for those who would bargain with us. We want no trimmers, no, nor men who would borrow verse from the poets of revolution and have not the feel for it in the gut.
That is unjust, and you must know it.
Must I? Then you must convince me, sir, for I think 'tis glory that some of us steer toward... and would serve whatever master did promise it.
Damn your insolence, you go too far.
And you not far enough, Mr. Midshipman.
Aye, what is amiss that you do both glare so? Here is ale to cool your pants. By God, what's that? Two cannon! The attack signal!
Can you see aught?
What, through this rain? I'm blinded. By God! Look there! A man of war! And 90 guns or more!
But whose? Is it the enemy?
There's another! Look! And another behind!
They're in line, battling, and sailing upon our ships at anchor!
Then we must fight them! Pull, lads, for your lives!
Wait! Look! Upon the mastheads!
My God!
What is it?
Just a red flag! They're flying the red flag!
Then they're with us!
Listen! They're cheering! The buggers are cheering us! By God, they are for us!
Bligh, have you news? What ships are there?
They are Admiral Duncan's squadron, sir.
What, are you sure? They would wait until Grey had arrived with his militia.
I had news from one of our wherrybirdmen, sir, who had been out to them. It seems the good admiral feared the temper of his people and sailed for Holland to tame their rebellious spirits in battle. But they, being decided to join the mutiny, did one by one turn out of line, haul up the red flag, and sail for the north.
By God, then we are lost. They now have 11 ships of the line moored out there, and half of them 3-deckers.
What of Duncan himself?
He keeps but 2 ships loyal, and together they make for the Texel, to hold the Dutchman there till help arrives.
Then he must look to God for it.
So must we all. What are we to do?
There is little we can do, but wait upon them who are now our masters, and pray they know not how to use their power.
Gentlemen, delegates of His Majesty's fleet at the north, I'm asked by a number of those here gathered to take the presidency of this council, convened aboard the Parliament ship Sandwich, this day, June the 2nd, 1797. Is that the will of the meeting?
Aye. Aye.
Then I do welcome our friends from Yarmouth, whose timely arrival has so changed our fortune.
And made you Admiral of the Fleet, Mr. Parker, with 1,000 guns at your command.
At our command, Mr. Hawkless, for I am only your appointed spokesman.
And have you spoke of late to them we would make listen to our complaints?
You know I have not, Mr. Blake, for they will not meet me.
They will not meet you. And yet they do reinforce their garrison with 2 regiments of militia and stopped our provisions from the shore.
Right.
Am I right?
And they have removed the buoys that mark the channel and denied us navigation up river or down it.
We need no buoys to guide us, Mr. Davis. No, nor officers.
Then what is your resolve?
I have a resolve here, written down and agreed by my shipmates aboard Inflexible. 'Tis this.
that we do station such ships in the estuary of the River Thames as may be sufficient to stop all vessels passing and departing until we have our grievances adjusted. And 'twas passed unanimous.
What? You would have us blockade London?
Aye, Mr. Davies, that we would. They would starve us into submission, so let us hit them in the belly. Aye, and in their pockets. We have the ships. We may stop any vessel we like and hold under our guns till their lordships come to terms.
You've heard the resolution. Who is in favor?
Aye!
Then it is carried.
My dearest Annie, I send this in haste, though in circumstances much changed from when I last did write. Seated as I am at a grand oak table in the stateroom of an admiral, the events of the past few weeks have transformed my situation and done much to restore in me the conviction that I am marked by a mysterious destiny for great enterprise. As you may know already from the broadsheets, the men of the fleet have elected delegates from every ship in pursuance of their grievances and have chosen me as their spokesman and president, believing that as I am a gentleman,
I am best equipped to state their case to the Admiralty, in which cause I am pledged to do my duty in the people's interest, yet restraining the wildest among them who would harm themselves, their cause, and their country by intemperate actions. More I cannot say, save that to assure you of the continuing love and affection of your husband, Richard Parker, whom men do call President of the Floating Republic. Oh, Ginny, now what am I to do with him?
My poor pet, I cannot tell you. They draw his character in all the broadsheets, for no so handsome as he be in the flesh, mind.
Oh, God, what a fool he is. I must go to him.
Annie, and that would be true folly. Well, keep your head down, lass, till it all blow over.
What? They will hang him.
No, no, they will not, sure. They bought the seaman off at Portsmouth, did they not, and no one hanged? So may they hear, and your Richard be returned to you a hero at last.
Ah, I am sure that is what he thinks. But the mood of the country has changed, Jean. There are many who were once sympathetic who now think the seamen have gone too far, and Richard has not the wit to see it. No, nor the will to resist his own fantasies. President of the Floating Republic.
A fine title for a baker's son.
Aye, he must ever play a part, whatever it is, so long as it's heroic, and he has an audience that will applaud him. Be it king, rebel, whatever, provided only that it is not the baker's son from Devon. Oh, how can I sit here, Jean, and not know what folly he is at? Will he never be satisfied till he has me in widow's weeds?
Mr. Platt, are you there?
Where else should I be? With the door locked and a guard set upon me.
Tis I, Richard Parker, and I've sent the guard away.
Ah, then I have the worst of the bargain. What do you want?
The council has determined to put ashore those officers yet remaining aboard. There's a boat waiting to take you to Sheerness at break of day.
Well, where are we now?
We're in the mouth of the Thames.
I had thought it was the Seine.
Before you go ashore, I wish to talk with you.
Well, talk away. I have but little else to entertain me.
To speak frank, I fear the temper of the men. They are angry enough for any reckless course, and if their lordships will not meet with us, I doubt but they will take it.
Now, you are their leader. Set what course you will.
Would that I had the authority, but this is a democracy, Mr. Platt, where leaders would be driven from the rear.
So what do you say? That you are not responsible for your actions as any lunatic in Bedlam?
When you go ashore, will you take a message from me to the Earl Spencer?
What? Me? To the First Sea Lord? Would that I moved in such esteemed company, Mr. Parker. What message?
Tell him that I am striving to prevent this affair from doing harm to the country. But there are some among the delegates who would take the ships to France. Tell him the only hope I have of influence over these wilder natures is that if he meets with me and promises to consider our grievances. Will you tell him that?
Aye. I will tell him that. If he will see me.
So, it seems our president desires to serve two masters.
I think he was never strong in rebellion's cause, my lord, but drawn by his own ambition and the people's will.
Yet they chose him as their leader, Mr. Platt. He must have expressed some sentiment to their liking.
Oh, they are simple fellows and ever impressed by a gentleman's way of speaking, whatever the words that are used.
And why does he take on the role?
He has long sought to play the hero, my lord, even when we share the same gun room, thinking himself cut out for more in life than has been his lot. But now he knows he's in more troubled waters than he has the bottom for, and seeks to make harbour before he's on the rocks.
Spare me your salt metaphors, Lieutenant. I have a politician's ear, and 'tis not tuned to them.
Your pardon, my lord. He seeks to find a way out of his present difficulty and thinks that if he might meet with your lordship and bring away some small concession, it will preserve his dignity and make them more pliant to his reasoning.
Ah, some small concession. Tell me, Lieutenant, is that what you would have me do?
Aye, my lord. Who am I to advise?
Come, sir, you know the men, and better than I ever will.
Well, I know there is much disunion among them, and the delegates too. It could be some little gift in your power might tip the balance to the moderates.
Say you so. Will you take a glass of Madeira with me, sir?
Oh, thank you, my lord.
How long have you been at sea, Lieutenant?
Why, since I was but 12 years old, my lord. 20 years, that is.
Is it not curious how society does choose its leaders? It makes you, who have been at sea 20 years, a lieutenant. And I, who went to sea but once upon the King's yacht, and was most wretchedly sick, First Lord of the Admiralty.
My lord.
And it makes Richard Parker the leader of a revolution. Your drink.
Thank you, my lord.
Tell me, why do people endure it? Not you and your ilk, you serve for glory and good luck to you, but the people of the lower deck. Why do they do it?
Why, for king and country, my lord, as do we.
You think so? Dr. Johnson did wonder why men went to sea when there were jails ashore.
I do not think I follow you, my lord.
Why, a man of war is a prison, is it not, Lieutenant? And the men who serve, condemned. 'Tis the only reason, bar madness, why men do join the King's Navy. And if we ever let them think they are aught but prisoners, then they will choose a gentler occupation.
I think you play the cynic, my lord.
I have that reputation. If we were to give these wretches what they ask, even in part, think you that it would stop there? By God, it would not. They would be electing their own officers, trying offenders before a jury of the lower deck. These things have been bespoke already. I know this. And next, they will ask, why do we fight these French when they are men like us, fighting for the same rights and privileges we demand of them that rule us, these gentlemen? You frown. I will trouble you no further with these projections. 'Tis enough that we do both ensure they cannot happen. No, there can be no further concessions, for we are upon a fearsome slope and dare not add grease to the wheels. This Parker, this president, as men call him, is he a radical?
I have heard him speak of Thomas Paine with some respect, my lord, and I know he's an admirer of Charles Fox and others of his ilk.
Is he so? Well, we do all admire Charles, and 'tis an influence we may yet use to some advantage. For Charles is a gentleman first, and a radical second, as are all of his ilk. They will see England ruled by liberals, provided only they be gentlemen they have known at school. But what are the men? Have they set the rights of man to music? And do they sing it as a sea shanty?
Well, for the most part, they're as children, my lord, and as easy swayed by the loudest voice.
There is a broadsheet that I hear tell is much read upon the lower deck, by name the Star.
Well, this is so, my lord. 'Tis a diversion for the men, and harmless.
I have late been acquainted with its editor, who is a man of small brain and less breeding, but as loyal to King George as hound to his master. He is preparing to trumpet such opinions as may yet blow down those wooden walls. You will take some several hundred copies down to the Nore when you return, and arrange to have them taken out and distributed among the fleet.
Aye, my lord.
And you will take a message to your friend Parker, but not from me.
The ship is secure, Mr. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Harkless. Mr. Harkless, do you walk with me a while?
Aye, if you like. Though I don't mind telling you, walking the quarter deck is not an exercise I take with ease.
You'll get used to it if you remain here much longer. Tell me, you've been at sea these 20 years or more. Did you ever see such a sight as this? There must be more than 100 ships upon the water, and more coming in on every tide.
Oh, I've seen bigger convoys during the war with the Yankees, but none so ill-natured as these.
Sure, they do hate us, everyone.
As would you, Mr. Parker, had you been homeward bound and a long voyage behind you, with London town but a few hours upriver and your pay due.
Many do complain they are short of food and water.
As are we, Mr. Parker.
God, it seems that every step we take to bring this business to a head does but take us further into the mire.
Bold hoy! Inflexible, John Blake!
Here is one who would take us out of it and into one of his own making.
Have you seen this?
What is it?
Ah, it's a broadsheet.
I can see that, Mr. Harkless. A star, eh?
Aye. And a more ill-omened firmament ne'er did shine from the heavens. Read that.
What does it say?
It's in the form of an address to the mutinous seamen of the Nore.
Ah, Will Davis. He will want to hear this.
You hear, John Blake? What? And more bad news?
I am Mr. Davis, and it is.
It does advise us to make known our wants in an official and respectful manner, being assured the love your king and country bear you.
What love is this? I know it not, save that it be that which brings the pox.
Read on.
The love your king and country bear you will dispose them to give every comfort and reward a grateful country can bestow, consistent with its existence as a nation.
With such a star to guide us, what need we of compass or sextant, but may all go home and leave it safely to our scribe here?
It is less kind as you read on, comparing us, as I remember, to the ravenous offspring of the pelican craving for the last drop of her affectionate mother's blood.
Ah, 'twas ever a lying rag.
Aye, but much read by the literate among our fellows and read aloud to their messmates, which is worse. For there are many copies come aboard and all hostile to our cause.
How came they past the guard boats?
Oh, I know not. I know only that they have added to the dissent among our people. And many of the buggers would have surrendered upon any terms.
Oh, dear God, what are we to do? We are hated by the men of the merchant fleet we have imprisoned here. And if this is aught to go by, we have few well wishes ashore.
And let us take our petition to the directorate in Paris and see if they will listen to us.
You are too fond of such talk, John Blake. And one day I will stop it.
But not today, I think, Mr. Davis.
Belay that, the both of you. God, do we not have enough enemies but that we must fall out among ourselves? The men would not sail, Blake, as well you know. They are too loyal to their king.
Boat hoy! Who is it?
Guard boat hoy, with Lieutenant Platt aboard.
Come aboard! Let us hope it is good news he brings us.
You are to come by boat to Gravesend at once. There, one will meet with you who has word from Parliament.
From Parliament? What means that?
Not the Admiralty? That is what I was told.
It may be a trap.
Even so, I think I must go. Will you take me, Lieutenant?
Aye, whenever you're ready. See, there is the coach. Now you must go alone.
I think not.
Those were my instructions. We will meet with you alone.
Very well. Bosun? You will hold Lieutenant Platt hostage upon my return.
Aye, aye, Mr. Parker.
Who's there?
Richard Parker.
Ah. Do you step inside the coach, Mr. Parker, where I may see you?
I'm told you come from Parliament.
I have that honor. Though it is devalued of late by the king's coin that does circulate there.
Who are you, sir?
There. Does the light announce me?
though not, I think, in flattering terms.
Sir, I am honored indeed that you do exert yourself on our behalf.
Oh, come, 'tis little exerted I am to sit in a coach beside a river. Besides, you must wait upon what I have to say before you speak of honor. Ah, please be seated. So, this is our new Admiral of the Fleet. I would ne'er have known you from the drawings of Mr. Crookshank, sir. You are most cruelly caricatured. But then, so I hope am I. Will you take a glass of cognac with me?
Oh, thank you. I will.
Yes, he has a way of drawing the brows together, yet narrowing the forehead, achieving a look of manic cunning combined with rustic simplicity. Strange to say, the only man I've ever met who has the look in life is our beloved monarch. Ah, your health, sir, and that of all his victims. So, you have above 100 ships in your net, I hear, and more swimming upriver with every tide.
There's no choice of mine, sir, believe me. I ne'er did wish to harm the country or its trade.
Oh, but you're too modest, sir. You have achieved more panic in the city of London in 2 short weeks than have a regiment of revolutionary generals in 4 years of bloody war.
I do assure you, sir, I am no traitor to my country.
I spoke in jest. Your pardon, sir, if I have offended you. No, we live in such times, Mr. Parker, when every working man who calls for a farthing more in pay is deemed a traitor to his country. You must wear the badge with pride.
I rejoice to hear you say it, sir, for we are most cruelly maligned by the government when what we ask is but our rights as honest Englishmen.
The rights of honest Englishmen are spat upon with impunity, Mr. Parker. We live in dangerous times, sirrah, and must tread delicate if we are to survive them. Here, let me fill your glass.
Thank you.
Now, since these laws that Master Pitt has lately passed, whenever 3 men meet in any name but God's, 'tis called sedition, and they are arraigned for it. Though how convicted, I cannot see. When 1 is certain to be a spy of the Home Secretary's, 2 his agent provocateur, and 3 paid to report back on them both. So, to liberty, sir. May its flame never dim.
Yeah.
Now, how goes it with you? Tell me straight.
Ill, I fear. The men know not what they do want, and our council is torn between those who would kiss Master Pitt's arse for assuring them of the king's pardon, and those who would have us sail for France and take service with the Directorate.
And you?
I strive to make sense of it all, to keep order, and to wring some concession from their lordship.
No, I fear they have made all the concessions they will ever make, Mr. Parker.
I see. Then you do not bring some news of some reconciliation. I had thought you were sent to intermediate between us.
Oh, I? My dear boy, they would not send me to intermediate for their soul's salvation were the very fires of hell upon them.
Then forgive me, sir. I'm in some confusion. You bring news, perhaps, of our support in Parliament.
I do, sir. There is none. Were there a vote tomorrow on this business, I doubt there would be 1 eye in your favor. I came tonight with the express purpose of urging you against continuing in your present course.
What? Is there not one radical in Parliament who'd raise his voice in the seaman's cause?
Aye, there are, and they have. But they, I should say we, have won 1 small gamble at Spithead and are wary of hazarding money at another throw so soon after.
Then you think we cannot win?
Ah, well, that depends upon the game you play, my friend. Win a fleet for France? Win a war for France, for revolution, that you may win, have you the will for it. But I think your own gamble is not so great, and yet greater. You hope to win some victory for the seamen, and the undying affection of your country with it. Am I right? Yes, I think I am. So let me tell you, friend, this cannot be. The broadsheets rant against you. The city merchants raise loyal regiments. The East India Company puts its ships at the government's disposal, and the king talks of hanging you all in chains at the low water mark. He was ever an impractical fellow.
But when we did begin our struggle, the people cheered us, in Sheerness they did. They sold us ribbons, red ribbons for our hats.
Aye, and they would sell black ribbons tomorrow for your funerals, and as cheerfully.
Are men so fickle that they may shout for us one day and see us hanged the next?
You know the answer to that riddle already, or I am much mistook. And to be fair to the people, they are much misled by Master Pitt and his crew. For the government does use the broadsheets with rare skill, for all we think them crude.
We ask so little.
What you ask for is change. and at a time of revolution, change is what our rulers fear the most. They see the spectre of the Tumbril in every shadow.
But you speak for change in Parliament, do you not?
Aye, and they do hate me for it. Besides, 'tis one thing to speak of it, and in Parliament among gentlemen who by and large do share the same privileges, 'tis quite another to set up a clamour outside the House, aye, and threaten violence if you're not heard.
Then we cannot look to Parliament for any help. And this is what you come to tell me.
It is, though I am truly sorry for it. For in our hearts, we are with you.
There are some of my fellows who would knock upon the door of Parliament with their cannon.
Now, that is rash talk, Mr. Parker, and you must stop it, as you are a gentleman.
It seems that being a gentleman, there is little I can do except consent to be hanged for asking to be treated as one.
It need not come to that. I will speak frankly. A word was whispered in my ear by one close to the government. Do you but bring the fleet to reason and surrender without bloodshed, there will be no crop of bodies sprouting from the yardarms. Now, I cannot speak as government mind, but this much was intimated.
And is that what you would have us do?
To be honest, I wish you would wring the bastards by the neck. But I am a politician, first and foremost, and I think it impolitic at this time to pursue your cause. You have won a small victory at Spithead. Let it rest there a while. Here, let me fill your glass. Surprising, is it not, how these rivers do flow on despite the war? They still have our cognac from France, and they do buy their good Northampton boots and Sheffield steel. Or at least they did, till your fleet put a blockade upon the traffic. Now, I warrant that our city merchants, made so patriotic by your defiance of king and country, do lose much in trade with the enemy on your account.
Does Parliament breed cynics, sir, that you can be so little discomposed by corruption?
It breeds a healthy appreciation of reality, sir. For our skill is in survival, and 'tis no easy trick in times like ours. Whate'er change we bring about, we must bring gradual. A brief skirmish, an advance such as we won at Spithead. The thing is, dear boy, to keep cozy in the meantime, and not to advance your head above the point where you may lose it. Give me some more cognac. We had as soon finish the bottle. No, think on what I have said, sir, and do not make a martyr of yourself. Better the old poacher that takes a partridge here, a deer there, and lives to poach another day, even if he must endure a little hardship in the meantime.
I think, sir, you have not lived upon the lower deck of a man of war, else you would not speak so lightly of enduring hardship. For I tell you, there are cozier emplacements and better stock with game. I thank you for troubling to see me, sir, though not for the news you bring. And for the cognac,
There's
a substance the French did e'er make well and more acceptable to the palate, I think, than their revolution.
I give you joy, then, sir, though I think your nature is not one that expects to find it. It begins to blow. You must hurry back to your ship. In stormy weather, Mr. Parker, the flame of freedom must be jealous guarded and kept in shelter, else it will blow out.
Aye. Well, sir, may you keep it safe for us in Parliament and cozy the while. And we will get on as best we can in the dark.
If that is what they say, then let us sail for France and have done with them.
Aye.
We need no boys nor lightships to guide us out to sea. But we are seamen and can find our own way out of this trap.
I say we make what terms we can.
What say you, Mr. Parker?
The terms of the royal pardon do exclude those of us who have led the men in this dispute.
But your Parliament friend swore their lordships will be lenient if we do surrender.
But can we trust such an assurance?
No.
Or they that gave him it?
Then what are we to do?
Why, take the fleet to France and be damned to them.
What to do? Safe to sit here and pick my nose and listen to them squabble like rats in a trap. Oh, Annie, I think you're in the right of it. And I wish for death or worse that I must meddle in such matters. Why do I? That I cannot remain in obscurity while others are doing, but must raise the banner high and cry, follow and rush upon the barricades. Well, 'tis an age of heroic gesture, they say. But would that I were an artist and might capture such deeds on canvas and die content of old age in bed.
We must do something, for we have not food or water for more than a few days.
Gentlemen, order. I think we must take the fleet to sea, for each company to elect a destination that does suit them. For mine own part, I should vote for the Americas, in the hope of finding there that freedom which is denied us in our own country.
An eye for France and revolution!
But go back to your ships and consult among the crews. For we began as Democrats, and we will end it thus.
Ship is in every respect ready for sea, Mr. Parker.
And the fleet?
They look to be ready and awaiting the signal.
Very well, Mr. Harkless. Cast loose the foretopsail.
Cast loose the foretopsail!
Is the signal gun shotted?
Yes, Parker.
Well then, fire!
Fire!
Mr. Harkless, you may proceed to take the ship to sea.
Take your hands off that.
What is the mess?
The people are fighting below decks. They will not turn the capstan.
And aboard Leopard. See, they are fighting on the forecastle.
The devil! Not a ship has moved.
Saving the repulse. See,
but they can sail towards the shore.
They're making for the fortress.
And they fall down the red flag.
And to raise the white. Well, we had thought to bring matters to a head.
My God! And Flexible's firing on her.
Damn John Blake!
This is to ensure.
A bloody fool! Fire the topsail, Mr. Harkless! Boat screw! Do you row me to Inflexible, Bosun? We must stop this!
The pulse is going aground! My God, an Inflexible upper beam with every gun run out!
They're aiming hard! See, just the sails are hit!
Make haste with that gig! Mr. Harkless, you have the ship!
Are you mad?
Hold, Cartwright!
Delay that! Blake, I order you!
You ought to know when aboard this ship. It's you gone and you will not help us sink the fastest. Shut your door!
You damn fool! You have them all hanged!
Hey.
No! Man, listen to me! I am your elected president!
How dare you!
Strike him down! And we have dismissed you. My God, if we have learned but one lesson from this business, 'tis never to choose a gentleman to speak for us. For as a gentleman will he always speak. Henceforth these guns will do our talking, and then our masters may listen to us. Fire!
Here, get this down here. It is fiery, mind.
What happened?
You do not know. Then perhaps it's better I do not tell you.
I was struck. And from behind.
Oh, I'm sorry for that. It was in the heat of the battle. And now our tempers are cooled.
What of Repulse? She was ablaze.
Oh. Easy. Come, let me help you.
Where is she? Has she foundered?
Oh, she, hell. They did put the fire out and catch you free. And now she lies at anchor beneath the guns of the fortress. And most of our fleet with her. Look, you see?
Let me lean a moment, for my legs will not hold me. How long was I senseless?
3 hours or more. See, they do fly the white flag at their mastheads. And there are but 3 ships left to us. And not for long, I think.
The end is over.
I think it did ne'er begin.
What fools we have been. And I the worst. What will you do?
Take the pinnace and sail to France with others of my mind. We will slip away by night and make for Calais. Will you come with us?
Would you have me?
Mm-hmm.
No. Thank you, but no. I will stay.
They will make you answer for it.
Then so be it. But what would I do in France? Who would know me?
Why did you embrace our cause? It puzzles me still.
I wish I knew. Why did you choose me? That is a greater puzzle. You did always doubt me.
Aye. But we doubt ourselves the more. We're not born to command. We must always choose those we think are betters to speak for us. But it will change.
Ah, I think not. For though you may overturn empires, you will ever set emperors in their place. And that is one reason I will not come to France. Here is my hand. I wish you luck.
And I you, though I fear it will ever evade you. You're sure you will not come with us?
I have been betrothed to failure all my life, and have a mind to marry her at the last. Mr. Platt, you may come out upon the deck.
What has happened?
The will of the people is that we do surrender. And as you are the senior officer aboard, I do hand the ship to you. Here are the keys to magazine and stores. We await your orders, sir.
One of the other ships?
They lie beneath the guns of the fortress, every one. And a white flag at every mainmast.
Then 'tis over.
Aye, it is. And I fear I am finished with it. My dearest Anne, the wheel has turned full circle, and I am once more inside a prison cell. I lie in Maidstone Jail, my Annie, and am condemned to die upon the morrow. I grieve that these words will cause you the greater grief than to he who writes them. Yet it is the final blow I deal you, who have, I fear, borne much from me since we did meet. Forgive me, Anne, if we did not ever quarrel.
And think not too harshly, for you yet love me, though dishonored has been. Richard Parker.
Richard. Oh, Richard. Pray God I am not too late.
Toast, my lord, to the king, and confusion to his enemies.
50 of whom are to be hanged before the week is out. How does many more transported?
They're guilty of mutiny and treason, my lord, and I doubt there'll be many tears shed for them. The law must be maintained.
Aye, Buckner, the law must be maintained.
Come in.
My lord, admiral. The prisoner is ready, and the hands assembled.
Very well, Mr. Platt. We will attend upon him.
And is he prepared for death, Lieutenant?
I think he is, my lord. He received a sum of money from his family and did send out for a black mourning suit and a silk cravat of the same shade, that he be dressed right for it.
Well, it is his last performance, and he may as well play it right. Come, let us up to the deck and have done with it.
Escort, bring forward the prisoner.
Prisoner, forward!
Are you ready, Parker?
I wonder if I might be indulged with a glass of wine.
I think that may be permitted, Lieutenant.
Sir.
Steward,
sir.
You fetch it from my day cabin.
Aye, aye, sir.
I hope you will shake hands with me, sir, for I ne'er did wish you ill.
I can have no objection to that, Mr. Parker.
May I be allowed to speak to the people?
My lord?
I think not. He has spoken quite enough to them before today.
I mean no sedition, sir. I acknowledge the justice of my sentence and hope my death may be deemed a sufficient atonement and save the lives of others.
That's enough. Your wine.
Thank you. So, I'm ready.
You must mount the scaffold on the forecastle and suffer this hood to be put upon your head and the rope around your neck.
The rope I will suffer gladly, but I would be obliged if you would spare me the hood.
Tis the regulation.
Very well.
Will any gentleman be so good as to lend me a white handkerchief that I may signal when I am prepared?
Give him mine,
Lord. Here. I'm putting it into your hands.
Thank you. Is the rope tied all right? That it may be quick?
Aye, it is.
Have mercy upon me, O God. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly of mine iniquities.
Yes, cool
and
enough.
Deliver me from
as if his whole life did but prepare him for this moment.
O God of
and
my
would
salvation.
Play it out to the last.
When he gives the signal, do you haul him up to the yard?
Aye, aye, sir. Mr. Black, is all ready?
Aye.
Then let us be done with it!
No!
Not the devil!
He's jumped before they could haul him up.
Is he dead?
Aye, my lord. His neck is broke.
Then haul him up, Lieutenant. Or do whatever you must do to him. And let us get on with winning this damned war. We've wasted quite enough time upon this business.
Run him up to the yards, bosun!
Christ, Parker. You would be impatient to the last, even for death.
Come. They will hang no more today. Let us to our beds.
Ladies, please. Know you where I can find a boat that will take me out to the fleet?
They will let none aboard, ma'am, for they are hanging the men who mutinied.
Oh, God, has it started? I must get aboard the Sandwich.
Is your man one of those condemned, lass, that you be so hasty?
Yes. Yes, my husband, Richard Parker. Have you news of him? Oh, I know by your faces. Tell me, please.
I am sorry for thee, lass. He was hanged this morning and is the first of many.
Oh.
Here. Oh, Christ have mercy. Take her, Mrs. Wilson. Oh, come, lass. Let us help you. For we are seamen's wives ourselves and as like to be bereaved sooner or later.
No. No. I'm all right. Does he hang still?
No. I've cut him down and he's buried already.
What? Do they e'en steal his body from me? And I have been pleading for his life in London.
Aye, and a scalping business if I make of it with marines to keep the crowd away.
Know you where they have laid him?
Aye.
Then, will you take me to him? Richard! Oh, God, is this where they would leave him?
They would not make a shrine of it, though they make a martyr of he who lies there.
But without the churchyard... Like a common felon. I cannot let him rest here without headstone or flower. I must dig him up and have him buried like a Christian.
What, lass? You cannot with your bare hands. What would you do?
I will take him where they will give him a decent burial, so help me. I can do no more for him alive.
Then, come. We may not let the lass do it alone. We will raise him yet. Though they think to let him lie there forgotten.
Thank you, Rector, for laying him to rest. And with the ceremony due to him. Oh,
'tis little enough, and I would do as much for any Christian soul. And 'tis said he did repent at the last, though mutiny is a heinous sin.
The greater sin is pride, sir, and that is the true reason he lies buried there. What is this? Strange sounds for a funeral.
There is news of a great victory, madam. The fleet that did lately sail from the Nore has met the Dutch at Camperdown and won a glorious battle. And the people do at last have cause for rejoicing.
Do they? So. May they remember the poor sailors who have bought their rejoicing so dear and think them worth their extra shilling a week. Aye. And their widows who must bury them. For whate'er they die for, these heroes, be it patriotism, as they do call it, or the rights of man, 'tis we who must pay their reckoning.
The Floating Republic was written by Paul Bryars. The part of Richard Parker was played by Brian Cox. Earl Spencer was played by Julian Curry. John Blake, Bernard Hill. Lieutenant Platt, Michael Tudor Barnes. Charles Fox, Stephen Thorne. And Anne Parker, Jennifer Piercy. Captain Bligh was played by Henry Stamper. Admiral Buckner, Anthony Newlands. Will Davis, Crawford Logan. Tom Hotless, Stuart Organ. Jeannie, Alexandra Matthey. Master at Arms and Rector, David Peart. And the Seaman's Wife, Jean Trend. The play was directed by Cherry Cookson.
Brian Cox is a National Theatre player.